right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are talking about The Banshees of Inisherin from writer-director Martin McDonagh, with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson and Kerry Condon. And I am so looking forward to talking about this movie. Definitely one of my favorites this year. Joining me to talk about it is Ben Miller, who's been on the show before. Happy to have him back. We have a great conversation, lots of really great puzzle pieces. And this is one of those movies, you know, we cover lots of horror, lots of superhero movies, lots of blockbusters. It's nice to, you know, squeeze in these different kind of movies every once in a while. We're getting a lot of different stuff here. So, yeah, great conversation coming up in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. I mentioned a couple times in the past that we recently switched podcast hosts, and while everything should have been seamless in the process of switching over, just in case, make sure you're subscribed wherever it is that you're listening. And if you like the show, drop us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Good Pods. We appreciate that. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And with that said, let's talk about The Banshees of Inisherin. All right, we've got Ben Miller back with us, and we are going to talk about The Banshees of Inisherin. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to be here, as always. It's always great to talk about a movie that you're actually passionate about, as opposed to being like, this movie was fine. Yeah, let's talk about the things that could have made it better, but this one is incredible. So
yeah, I'm right there with you. And this movie, I think I mentioned this on Twitter a couple of days ago. Like, this is a real, like, sticks with you kind of movie. Yes. It's a real grower. Like, I liked it plenty walking out of the theater, mm-hmm. but I have not stopped thinking about it since I saw it about 5 days ago now or something.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's great, and there's just so much to unpack, to use a podcast term.
But absolutely.
Yeah, we'll have plenty to get into with this one.
Yes, sir.
Man, where do we even start? You know what, before we start getting into puzzle pieces, are you a big Martin McDonagh fan?
I am. I didn't know anything about him until In Bruges came out, mm-hmm. and I had heard all these people tell me about In Bruges, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, Colin Farrell at the time was still in his, like, oh, he's a failed movie star, but he's still right, in sure. stuff. And then that movie kind of signaled, like, oh, okay, he's a character actor. And I watch it and I'm like, okay, this thing is incredible. It's like nothing else. And, you know, I have an affinity for UK directors who like to use the C word in their movies a lot for some reason.
Sure.
Anytime just sure. like, just letting expletives fly is always just mm-hmm. like, man, this is up my alley. I loved In Bruges. Mm-hmm. Never got around to Seven Psychopaths, but
funny enough, I was gonna say, like, In Bruges, great, but I've only seen it once, and I was gonna rewatch it for this, but I'm just gonna rewatch it on my own time later.
I think that's the right thing, because a lot of people are like, okay, I watched In Bruges in prep for watching Banshees of Inisherin, and it's like, I don't think you should. Like, they're
just watch it.
They're not
just
the same,
watch it when you get to it.
They're not the same type of movie. That's the most interesting thing about it, is McDonagh really grew as a director from that movie to this movie. It's like, In Bruges is like pretty harsh and kind of mean spirited, and mm-hmm. this and Banshees of Inisherin has this such a like despite the kind of the untouchable tone, you're mm-hmm. like, well, it's still kind of gentle to it all, and
sure,
and Three Billboards had that same kind of In Bruges meanness,
sure,
and then this one just kind of takes a different kind of turn.
Well, Seven Psychopaths was actually my number one movie of 2012.
Really?
So,
really?
Yeah, so that's where I'm coming to him from.
Okay.
As much as I really liked In Bruges, but haven't seen it in forever, and Three Billboards, I also really liked, even though I know people turned on it after, you know.
It's cool to hate for some reason, but I'm not going to. It's American Hustle and Three Billboards are the two that are like, no, you're not allowed to like it. It's like, no, I like them. They're good movies. Like,
Yeah.
So,
speaking of things that people don't like, True Detective season 2 is when I like fell in love with Colin Farrell.
I couldn't get on board. Like, I liked what he was doing, but I just couldn't get on board with it. So
yeah. So I mean, he's great. McDonagh's great. Mm-hmm. Brendan Gleeson's great. I mean, everybody involved in this is great, and they're all just doing such amazing work.
Yes.
But you know what? With that said, let's start getting into the puzzle pieces. What do you have for your first piece?
Okay. It's, you know, it's kind of cliche to say like, oh yeah, an Irish story that's, but the first thing I thought of is the film, The Field from Jim Sheridan in 1990. It kind of, you know, in general, just kind of like, okay, the super green Ireland of everything and mm-hmm. Irish people being super Irish, but it kind of digs a little deeper into, okay, standing by principles and being like, I want this for specific reasons. So Richard Harris is this guy who has this field he's had for a long time, and he finds out that he actually doesn't own it. And then there are a lot of political and personal machinations in the background in order to try to stop him from getting it, and he's trying to do whatever it takes to get it, and kind of take some darker turns. And it's the thing that I always assume the two. Now, The Field is a very serious movie. It's not as, like, The Banshees of Inisherin still has the comedic tone to it and has a lot of super funny parts. The Field is the opposite of that, but it does have that same feel of, like, okay, there's this entrenched history with these people in this area, and you can't just... It's like, no, just move on, do something else. It's like, no, that's not really something I can do. It's more sticking to principles, and that's kind of where I had it from there.
Yeah, for sure. While you were talking about it, I've never actually seen The Field, but while you were talking about it, I brought up his IMDb, and I'm like, yeah, exactly as I expected. Jim Sheridan, not a lot of comedy amongst his films. Super, super serious.
Yeah, even the lightest of his films, which is probably In America, has some real serious stuff to it. Like, it's light, but you're like, oh, well, child death and AIDS and you know, poverty. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, still, that's the lightest of them all. Yeah, he takes stuff pretty seriously, but yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like McDonough is also a person who, aside from the comedy aspects and all that, but, like, the setting is always super important to his films. And so, yeah, the Ireland setting here is, like, a big part of it. And I think that'll come up in other puzzle pieces well. But, great one to kick it off there. I'm going to go with another one for my first piece here that it deals with, like, with the tone of it all. And I felt there is almost a feeling of watching this movie where it's almost like biblical in a way, like almost like fairy tale-ish, almost mm-hmm. like, like a story you almost can't believe in a way. Like, how could this possibly happen?
Very much a fable. Yes.
Yeah, fable-like. And I felt like it almost could have been a segment of the interlocking segments of Paul Thomas Anderson's Magnolia. All these segments of these, like, sad people just like grasping for connection. Mm-hmm. And in that, of course, you've got all these different groupings of people that are all kind of coming together by the end in this weird way that almost feels biblical in the way that everything just kind of comes together. This is just one story, and mm-hmm. we get to live with these people for a while and get to know a lot more about them. So we get to dig deeper into their particular story. But the vibe of it all and the feel of this particular friendship and what it is going through, as well as everything going on around them with the war on the other side, outside of the island and everything.
Yeah.
You get that feeling of just how big everything is and how little everything is at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good one because, you look at, is there a deeper meaning, and kind of also not on top of that, to add on to that is the frogs falling from the sky, the kind of unknowing, like, why is this happening in Fargo? It's same thing as, like, in Banshees of Inisherin, it's like, okay, is this lady a witch? Is there is there some mystical aspect to this? Is there something at play that I don't understand? So I understand that completely. It's a great one.
Also, why doesn't Brendan Gleeson die? Like,
it's a spoiler alert if you haven't seen the movie, obviously. But at the end of the movie, you're like, okay, well, Colin Farrell goes to burn down Brendan Gleeson's house with him in it. Saves the dog, though. And then at the end, you're like, he's out of the house and he's safe. And you're like, okay, well, how did that happen? Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's not a puzzle piece per se, but, like, this movie is an answer to every freaking movie where the dog dies.
Yes.
It's like, finally.
Oh, my. So that entire sequence, I was just like fist pumping. So Colin Farrell's pissed and he's going to his house and he's going to do something in response to his donkey dying. And he goes, and the witch lady's like, don't kill that dog. And he said, don't put words in my mouth, in my head, that I wasn't even thinking about. And he goes in there and you're seeing this dog and you're like, he's not going to do it. Is he? He's not going to do it. And he says the greatest line. He's like, why would I hurt you? You're the only nice person having to do, like, you're the only nice thing with this guy. And the whole time I'm like, sweet, this dog is safe.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
By the way, that line is so good. Don't put thoughts in my head I wasn't even thinking. Like, because he's so simple, but yes. Like, it's God, that is just such a great line.
The thing that Colin Farrell does really, really well in this movie, and I think it's really hard to do in films in general, is be stupid. Not like, oh, you're dumb, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, no, you're just not that intelligent, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Like, right, and it's okay. It's like you're just the nice guy. Yeah, like you're just a nice,
and that's the thing he always relies on. Yeah,
yeah, it is great. What do you got for your next piece?
Kind of in the same lines of the tone, with the darker aspects and comedy. Fargo. There are parts of it having to do with Fargo, the film, obviously basing the tone, but specifically the TV show Fargo, the second season. In the second season, Patrick Wilson is among a very, very large. Second season of Fargo is the best season. If you're going to go catch Fargo, go watch the second season. That's the one with Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons.
So good.
Patrick Wilson, yeah. Gene Smart, Ted Danson. But there's a scene where Patrick Wilson, as a police officer, I think they're not in Fargo. I want to say they're in Nebraska or something like that, but he comes up to he's talking to somebody and he's telling them, he's like, you need to get out of town, he's a criminal, and he's being very kind about it, and the criminal goes, it's like, you know, as kind as you're being really mean. And that line in general just kind of stuck with me. Is like, okay, that's exactly what this movie is. I'm saying the nice thing in on paper, but in reality, right, I'm being very, very cruel. Like, the cruelty inherent, everything Brendan Gleeson does, never, at no point is he necessarily evil. You're never on the side of like, oh, this guy deserves everything he's getting. It's
right.
Okay, he's just kind of like, it's not very nice what he's doing, and it's not very polite. But at the same time, he justifies his actions. So,
sure.
Yeah, Fargo has kind of been in that same type of realm.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing that isn't like explored very often, that like niceness, like, yes, it's not really a theme that you get a lot in movies, and it kind of made it a little difficult, honestly, to come up with puzzle pieces, because I do think that that's like the biggest thing here is is that kind of balance of niceness and meanness and the simple parts of friendship. But
I do agree there's a real disconnect. It was like, man, there it's hard to find things to connect these two, like, because it's like, okay, angry, but at the same time, it's like, is it though? Is it kind of nice?
Yeah. For sure. Well, you brought the Coen brothers in, so I'm going to go to some more Coen brothers and go with Inside Llewyn Davis. This is specific to Brendan Gleeson's character. We're going to take a sidestep from Colin Farrell and talk specifically about him, who basically is... He wants to be left alone to work on music. He specifically says music is everlasting. Nobody remembers people for being nice. Yep. Like, he just wants to be left alone and make music. And I think as somebody who makes music, it's kind of it's kind of true. Like, you know, you kind of have to choose, like, what am I going to do with my time right now? Am I going to make something, or am I going to just hang out and, you know, have friends and, you know, be a good friend to my friends? And it's kind of a difficult thing to balance. And
on top of that, I mean, Llewyn Davis being like kind of the ego of, I'm making something that's important. It's like,
it's
are
so
you
important.
Though? Yeah. Like, and that was a big part of Banshees. It's like every time he's like, I'm making this song. And it's like, this is 1923. You're making an Irish violin ballad.
No one's
going to hear it. Yeah. but it's important to them. It doesn't matter if it's important to anybody else. They think
absolutely
it matters.
Absolutely. And like, yeah, you lose those meaningful relationships in the process of like chasing after that, you know, that piece of art that's going to live forever. And Llewyn Davis does not have any meaningful relationships at any point in that movie. Nope. And so, you know, I feel like he is also struggling with those choices of what to focus on, except for I feel like he's not as worried about it as Brendan Gleeson's character. I think under the surface, there's a lot more Gleeson's character. He wants to still have some friends.
Yeah, and Llewyn Davis is kind of cosmically cursed as opposed to Brendan Gleeson going like, okay, I'm going to actually take control of this and make it, I'm going to take control and do what I need to do. And Llewyn Davis is like, no matter what I do, it just kind of still throws me down.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next one?
Still on the same lines of more in, you know, the island of Inisherin is secluded from the rest of Ireland, and kind of thinking in that and with the tonal violence, I thought of Sam Raimi's A Simple Plan.
Sure.
Just stuck in the, like, in A Simple Plan, Bill Paxton and Bill Bob Thornton are among some guys who find some money and be like, okay, well, let's stash it, and then we can get away with this, and it'll be all right. And then, as simple as it is, it gets further and further out of control. But it's an insulated community as opposed to a big place that everybody's coming into. They know everybody around. Nobody is showing up out of nowhere, essentially. And when somebody does show up out of nowhere, it's noticed. And with A Simple Plan, Raimi and McDonough have. I'm not saying they're in any way the same kind of filmmaker, but they kind of exist on the same tone. They always, despite a subject matter that is darker, they always want to throw some comedy into it, no matter how dark or unplaced that comedy is, and it feels natural. And A Simple Plan has that comedic undertone as well. And at the same time, I kind of see the parallels between Billy Bob Thornton's character and Colin Farrell's. Just kind of existing on that level of, okay, I'm not in charge of this. This is not my thing. I'm not the, I have to rely on the intelligence of others to try to get by in life. And I also see like the kind of the parallels between like Billy Bob Thornton relying on his intelligent brother, Bill Paxton, where Colin Farrell ostensibly, especially being in the 20s, it's like, okay, this is a male dominated world. But Colin Farrell relies on his sister to essentially guide him spiritually because of her intelligence. By the way, Carrie Condon, my favorite performance in the film. She is so good. And she's really the one that stuck with me. So Colin Farrell has that simple politeness, and Brendan Gleeson is that kind of coarse, like artistic, and Carrie Condon balances between the two as you're like, okay. You can live in both worlds and everybody's on your side. A Simple Plan is the one that I always think of.
That's a great one. And Coen Brothers and Sam Raimi, they go hand in hand in a way. And
absolutely.
Then McDonough kind of operating on that kind of level here, especially with that balance of humor. So I think that's a great one. Speaking of Carrie Condon's character, as well as the other two, really, all of the leads here. I'm going to go with, we've got the David Thewlis of podcasting here.
Sir, yes.
I'm going to go with Anomalisa from Charlie Kaufman.
Ooh, it's good.
This is a movie about, I already said about like that, trying to connect with other people. In this movie, Colin Farrell obviously can't get through to Brendan Gleeson. That's kind of like the main, you know, crux of the film.
Yes.
But Gleeson also can't, you know, get through to Farrell. Carrie Condon can't get through to Farrell. Farrell, vice versa. Barry Keoghan is off to the side, can't get through to anybody. A total mess. And, you know, that's a big part of Anomalisa is the idea of this person who just can't connect with other human beings in any kind of way. And so it made me think of that. An incredibly bleak film, of course, Kaufman, but also with a lot of humor, also with another great score from Carter Burwell. So you got that connection too. So a lot of that same thing going on there.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, the connection part, like there's a real disconnect between Colin. As soon as Colin Farrell gets the news, it's like, okay, well, Gleason's not going to have anything to do with me. he just spins his wheels. He's like, I cannot, I have to understand it. Yeah. And it's beyond understanding for either somebody like him or somebody just in general. Like, you just, it's not going to be something you can break through. And in Anomalisa, the whole time, it's like everybody is the same except for this one. And then all of a sudden, the one, it's like your world doesn't matter. That's actually, it's a perfect example, actually, because Colin Farrell's entire life in Banshees of Inisherin is perfect because of this one relationship.
Yeah.
Once that one relationship is deteriorated, his world falls apart.
Yeah.
In Anomalisa, same exact thing. The one relationship is good, but once that relationship starts to fall apart, there's no coming back from it, and it's going to go badly.
Yeah, he rested everything on that, and then that's all there is. So, I as soon as I left the theater, I texted my best friend. I was like, imagine if we lived on a little island and I didn't want to drink with you anymore because I just wanted to work on my music. And he sad-faced it. But
I mean, it's devastatingly sad. Like, there's such a disconnect between, you know, like, the great thing that McDonough does is never show them in happy times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if 2 days before, when they're sitting there drinking, having a good time, and then drawing on, it's like, okay, but you have to imagine what that is, and they never get on that. They never get on that level, and so your mind goes, it's like, well, there, he must have done something. He's like, no, he probably didn't.
Right. Yeah. No. It's a really interesting choice not to show them in happy times, but it's a really good one, I think. What do you got for your next one?
So this is probably too easy, but I'm going to go with it anyway. Another McDonough film, but not a Martin McDonough film, is his brother John Michael McDonough doing Brendan Gleeson, The Guard.
Okay.
A great film from 2011. It's more on the In Bruges side of like the mean of it. But more than anything else, it's just the environment they throw around the guard. It's so Irish, and it's so specifically Irish, and all these specific weird things. Don Cheadle's character shows up, and he's trying to interview people, and he's in Ireland, and he's like, okay, well, I just talked to these people. He shows up, and a woman speaking Gaelic, though understands him perfectly. And he's like, oh, you don't speak English? And he's like, if you want to speak English, go to English. But she's saying this in Gaelic. Like, so, and there's, it's so specifically Irish in such a fun way that is so detached from anything I know.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, you look at a film like The Guard, which is had a modern setting, and you look at Banshees of Inisherin, and there's not a whole lot of disconnect between the two as far as technology. Like, yes, it's set in 1923, but you're like, is this 1723? Is this modern times? And they're just off the, like, off the coast. Like, it doesn't necessarily seem as something where you're like, oh no, this is a period piece. It's like, well, it is. It's set in a specific time, but it's kind of a place lost in time. And The Guard kind of has that same level. Also, McDonough and his brother have that same kind of, they'll put that mysterious, like, how did this, like, The Guard ends kind of very ambiguously. Like, also involving a fire with Brendan Gleeson's character, maybe escaping, did escape. So, I mean, they all kind of have that mystery to it. So that was obviously sticking with me. Different types of films, but I see the same kind of relationships.
I'm going to have to watch that. I've never actually seen it. I saw Calvary, but I've never seen The Guard, and it sounds great. And, you know, speaking to that place out of time and, you know, where is this place? Like, I've never seen this kind of specific place before. This might seem a little silly, but I'm going to go with Irish Napoleon Dynamite for my next puzzle piece here. This world is just so divorced from anything else, like, we've seen in geographically or time-wise, like you were just saying, you know, like, you really just can't place it. And it's like, these people with their strange little lives, and you get a full sense of what their life is day in and day out, because there really isn't much more to it. It's just they live in this little tiny community, and they're probably not going to go anywhere else than this, and they probably have never been anywhere else than this, and you're getting this little glimpse into their weird little world, and there's a lot of animals, and there's a lot of weird side characters.
I really appreciate the Napoleon Dynamite. As somebody who lives in West Texas and had lived in West Texas for a long time, and knowing how weird and detached it is from the rest of the world, I understand completely. Yeah, and I think one of the guys in the bar is like reading a paper, and he's like, "Oh, Civil War's going." It's like, "Oh, I'm cheering for the one side who's winning, or maybe it's the other side." Like, I don't really know. Like there's a Civil War going on literally a mile away, and they just don't care, and it doesn't touch them. It just it's not a part of it that they have any sort of aspect of need. Now I need an Irish Napoleon Dynamite, like the idea of that in general,
full blown, just like, just go for it. Absolutely. Brendan Gleeson still has to be in it though.
He'll be the Uncle Rico.
Bring some gravitas, you know.
I can throw my shillelagh way over that all the way over those mountains.
Nice. What do you got for your next one?
This is kind of along the lines of a film where there's a fine line between friendship and are they friends, are they not friends, and kind of goes back and forth. It's the film Thoroughbreds. I'm not sure if you ever, it's a different type of movie as far as to get on the same wavelength of, it's kind of, you look at it now and you're like, hey, it's Anya Taylor-Joy and Olivia Cooke, two actresses at the peak of their powers right now. And you're like, this is something I get on board with. But it's, on one side, you have the Olivia Cooke character who kind of mirrors Brendan Gleeson as in like, I'm not going to put emotion into this. And this is not about like, oh, we're friends, but I understand the reality of it. But at the same time, there are some other aspects. But it's two friends who are willing to sacrifice themselves for the sake of getting what they want.
Yeah.
And it has that darker, funnier tone. There's an incredible scene in Banshees of Inisherin, my favorite scene in the film, where Colin Farrell gets beaten by a police officer, so he's on the ground, and Brendan Gleeson's seeing this from far away. And he comes up, kind of brushes him off, puts him on his carriage, helps him up, and he goes off. And they're heading in a direction. Colin Farrell bursts into tears from all the emotion of everything. Brendan Gleeson wordlessly gets off and continues on their way. There's a level of humanity involved in it, despite like, okay, we don't have this connection anymore. But there's still, it's like, you're still a human that I just want to be decent to.
Sure.
And Thoroughbreds kind of has that same level of like, okay, we want to do something really, really dark here, but at the same time, there's still our friendship to take into consideration, and I'm willing to sacrifice myself to allow you to get what you want.
Yeah. That's a really interesting piece. I love Thoroughbreds. Such a great movie. But I was trying to think of like, a movie that specifically has this kind of friendship, because, you know, there's so many comedies, like silly comedies, like Apatow comedies and stuff like that, where a friendship falls apart and then maybe we'll get back together. We don't know, things like that. But none with this particular kind of, back and forth.
Yeah,
and
so it's a little different. It's never like used to be friends or the friendship, like, generally, they're friends, and then it deteriorates, and maybe it gets to a point where they know they can't be friends anymore, but there's always, like, somewhat of a redemption, and there's not really much of a redemption here. I mean, that one scene is the closest you get to redemption, or the scene where Colin Farrell drunkenly tells him what he thinks, but still, like, there's points where there's no coming back from what's happened.
Sure.
And like you said, all those Apatow comedies, I was racking my brain hard, trying to think of a situation where you're like, okay, is there a movie with friends who are like, okay, we're not going to be friends anymore. No coming back from this. I was like, not really.
Not really. Yeah. I'm sure there's something. Somebody hopefully will write in and let me know. But I couldn't think of one that, that ends on that kind of note.
Me
so,
neither.
Yeah. Well, I'll go to my last puzzle piece, which is Richard Linklater's Last Flag Flying.
Ooh.
A very good but very different movie from this, but it's about three old war buddies who have to reunite and travel across the country when one of their sons dies at war. Yes. And it's not even like a hero's death. He just died. Mm-hmm. And there's just these long-standing resentments between the three of them, between them and their country, between, mm-hmm. you know, everything happening with the war outside of their little personal relationship that's going on. And you know, I know a big part of The Banshees of Inisherin that I maybe haven't even fully dug into that much yet is the war outside, the civil war that's happening, which obviously is a major, you know, there's a major connection between that and between this friendship's, like, little mini war happening here on this island. And that just made me think of how those characters just have so much that they're holding on to in Last Flag Flying, and that they're all still dealing with and probably will never be okay with, but for this moment that we're watching them having to do this thing, they're just kind of getting along for a little while anyway.
That's a really good point. Like, that's I never even thought of that part of it, because I remember we were talking about I was talking in another podcast about Last Flag Flying, and I'd seen it and I was like, man, I really enjoyed this movie, but that the constant resentment, but still having to put up with somebody. Like, as much as Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson can hate each other, they're what on this, you know, these couple square miles. There's nowhere you can escape.
It's they walk past each other every day.
You're not
going to
miss this person. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's you can hate them all you want. You're still going to see them every day. And there's nothing you can do about that, and you have to live with that. That's a really good one. I really like that aspect of it, too.
Right on. Well, do you have any more pieces?
Not really. I mean, might as well make it in Bruges, but I mean, it's too easy. But this is kind of a, you know, friendship born out of violence and, and necessity. But, I mean, that's the movie that the big thing that made Banshees of Inisherin so great is the chemistry and the clashes between Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And In Bruges is the place that set it up. Like, it's like, you know what you're getting into. It's like, man, In Bruges and their relationship was so great. Let's do this once again. It's way different tonally, but, that's just kind of the, like, it just set the tone for what you expect and McDonough and everything. And they're two extremely different movies.
Yeah.
But
to that point, I didn't prepare anything for this, so I don't actually have a piece, but I was thinking about classic, you know, pairings where, like, you know, we love these two people together. Let's give them something completely different.
Yes.
Like, you know, and so I know that that's happened many times before, and you know, that kind of In Bruges speaks to that exact idea. So
that's a good point. That, like, I appreciate all three of them for being like, okay, this isn't going to be an In Bruges reunion. It is an In Bruges reunion actually with the people, but we're not making In Bruges 2. We're taking a totally different tone with this. A lot more sweaters.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yeah. Other than that, do you have any closing thoughts on The Banshees of Inisherin? Anything that we didn't quite get to while talking puzzle pieces?
One of the saddest deaths in cinema history is the death of that pony. I mean, So you said it correctly. I always say Barry Keoghan?
Keoghan, I believe.
Keoghan? Okay.
I believe. I could be wrong.
So Barry Keoghan's character is tough to get on board with. But he's the one I probably have racked my brain over the most as far as, like, did I like it? Did I not like it? Is it exactly what the film needs? Is the only thing holding the film back? So, and the ending has a lot to do with that as well. I didn't know your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of almost took him as, like, almost like a next level down from Colin Farrell's life. Like, you know, and that's why he's kind of taken him under his wing at times and like kind of accepts him in. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely a mess of a character. And like, there's there's a lot to it. And that scene where he just very knowingly that it's not going to happen, but you know, at least shoots his shot.
Man, it was so sad too. It's like, whenever he just kind of like realizes it's not the case and be like, okay. And like, he's not like, no big deal. He's like, okay, he's devastated. He's just not saying anything. And
yeah.
And even Colin Farrell kind of uses him as a like, well, I'm having a rough time, but I'm not him. Like,
at least I'm not that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah. There's gotta be someone going through it harder.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it's a really interesting character, and I loved him in this. And you mentioned it earlier, but Kerry Condon, just absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
I mean, I would almost, come end of the year award time and absolutely. All that, I would put her before anybody, honestly.
And don't worry about Kerry Condon, you're like, I haven't seen her. I hope she becomes a big star. She's making Marvel money. She's the voice, she's the voice of the replacement for Jarvis.
Oh, really?
It's Friday. The Iron Man's Friday is Kerry Condon. So she's already entrenched in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She said, Better Call Saul.
Mike's
daughter-in-law. Yeah. So it's always nice to see Kerry Condon around. And she was and I think she got punched by Sam Rockwell in Three Billboards.
Oh, was it? You know what? I think you're right. Yeah.
She was up there who's the one, the goofy kid, Caleb Landry Jones, girlfriend or something. Yeah. That's so yeah. You see now that Kerry Condon's going to be a thing, you can be like, oh, I see Kerry Condon all over the place. So, yeah, good for her. Good. Nice to see her around. Doing
nice.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I think that does it for the Banshees of Inisherin. Is there another movie you watched recently you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
I'm always on the lookout to try to knock out old Oscar movies that I'd never seen. And, just kind of on a whim, I caught Tender Mercies from 1983 with Robert Duvall. I went in with no expectations, and it's a very gentle, nice, quiet movie with good intentions and kind of a sad undertone. But, it's a quick, I think it's 95 minutes. Great Duvall performance. Great performance from everybody in that movie. But Duvall's great guy. Willing, like, I'm on board with him winning the Oscar. It's not really what you expect, because you expect something a little more dramatic, and it never really happens. Mm-hmm. But it's a sweet, little quiet movie. So Tender Mercies, go check that out if you haven't.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I remember it came up as a puzzle piece. It must have been on some music movie or something, but I can't remember which one. But I'd love to watch it sometime.
Oh, it's a good one.
Duvall's great. Awesome. Well, Ben, where can people find you and your podcast?
You can find me on Twitter at NebIsBen. I'm Letterboxd and Neb810, and Instagram Ben Miller Movies. You have my wife's website, icecreamforfreaks.com. Keep writing all sorts of new stuff. I had my Banshees of Inisherin review last week. Just reviewed Decision to Leave, about to do All Quiet on the Western Front and Tar. Terrible time to be a film reviewer, because there's just too much stuff all
Tell
at once.
Tell me about it.
You can find my podcast, Film Critic and the Common Man, on YouTube, on Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you find your podcast. I talk to my brother, Jake, who is not a film critic, about films. Sometimes there's movies like The Lobster where he hates and I love, and that's always fun. Or there are movies that I'm not a big fan of and he really likes. We were doing, since it's October, we were doing spooky season movies. So we just, Silence of the Lambs dropped last week. We're doing The Shining this week, and then we'll get on to regular scheduled programming.
Has he seen The Banshees of Inisherin yet?
He has not. I'm really interested to see what he would think, because sometimes my mom's like, he's going to like this. This is really up his alley. And he's like, that was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. So,
it's hard to tell with these kind of movies.
It's hard to tell.
For sure.
Like I watched Tar, after watching it, I'm like, oh boy, nobody in my life is going to like that movie. Nobody. Yeah. And it's like, I'm just essentially on board with like, well, I liked it. I'm going to have to live with that. Even in the screening I watched, they were talking to people coming out and everybody goes, that was, yeah. and I'm like, I get it. I get it completely. But yeah.
Well, right on, Ben. Thank you so much for being back on the show, and hopefully we'll get you back again sometime.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
What's up, list nerds? Force 5 is a show about movie-related top 5 lists, hosted by me, Blacklist screenwriter and ex-video store cinephile Jason Kleberg. I have a new guest on each week, and the guest gets to pick the topic. Past guests have included film directors, screenwriters, actors, critics, comedians, rappers, artists, and other podcasters. Love or hate our picks, you're guaranteed to walk away thinking, what would be on my list? Search Force 5 wherever you get your pods, or head to force5podcast.com.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about The Banshees of Inisherin. Make sure you go see it. Great movie. And thanks to Ben Miller for joining me on that one. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, make sure you are subscribed wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. And of course, we would really appreciate your 5-star rating, wherever that is. It supposedly raises us up in the rankings and all that stuff. Who knows? But, you know, we appreciate it regardless of if it does that or not. You could also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And don't forget, we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. If you want to support the show, you can sign up over there and get access to all that stuff, including at the time this goes up on the main Piecing It Together feed, I will be just getting back from a little trip to New York, and then it will be full speed ahead with getting my new album, More Content, released. And first up, I'm putting it up on the Patreon as a bonus for the subscribers, so you'll be able to hear the whole thing very soon if you are subscribed to the Patreon. But for everyone else, I'm going to play a song off that new album right now to close out the episode. And I am going to go with a song called Ascending, which I actually have a music video in the works for. I hope you enjoy this track, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon. Thank you.
an All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.